Did you know that the crown that now sits upon King Charles III's head was nearly stolen in 1671? The plot was cooked up by one Colonel Blood. Upon entering the tower, Colonel Blood flattened the crown and stowed it beneath his cloak. He was soon caught and questioned by King Charles II himself. The king was so impressed by Blood's feat that he let the colonel off without a single charge.
Welcome to the Lore of the South. Lore of the South.
Follow the show on social media to keep up with what's going on and to see pics that go along with each episode. Search for Lore of the South on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook.
Welcome back to Lore of the South with me, Kelly Cruz. How the heck is everyone doing? It's been a minute, y'all. This episode is so late, and I do apologize. And I hope I'm not echoing too much. Y'all have to let me know in the comments. We have had so much stuff going on. That is why this is so late. I just have not had the time or the energy to write and record like I should have been doing. But we're back on track, y'all. We've had graduations, anniversaries, birthdays, Mother's Day. So maybe I should go ahead and shout all of those out. Let's see, happy birthday to me. And to my son, Hayden, happy Mother's Day to all the moms, especially my mom, Diana. She is our rock. Happy birthday to my sister-in-law, Kelly. Happy birthday to a cousin and to an aunt. And happy anniversary to another cousin. Oh, and happy birthday to my brand new grandniece, Dylan Hope. Congrats, Brittany. So as y'all can see, there's been a lot going on. And here's another update for y'all. Since I first started writing this weeks ago, they did it. The last of the Cruz kids have graduated. Our H's have done it, and I'd like to pat myself and producer Mike and my mom on the back. We got all three kids to a huge milestone in their lives, and we are so proud of them. Would y'all like to see their grad announcements? They're pretty funny. And I did a joint announcement since both kids graduated at the same time. And those two have done everything together. They're only 10 and a half months apart, so we couldn't get them any closer. And they're best buddies. And it just made sense for them to graduate together. But, you know, we have a lot of dark humor in this family. And I just hope everyone that received an announcement gets the humor and wasn't like shocked. Let's just say, and not to give it away or to spoil it, but let's just say when you open the card, on the inside there's kind of a there can only be one moment going on in there. Let's see what else. Oh, I had the biopsy, and y'all, I have to quote my friend Missy. This is what she said when I was telling her, when I was described how the biopsy was done. She was like, why does anything that has to do with women's health look like something from a sci-fi movie? Because y'all, that's what it was like. If the doctor had come in dressed like a gray alien, I don't think I would have been too shocked. Okay, that's a lie. I would have been shocked, but it felt like an alien abduction survivor story. Maybe it was grays wearing people suits. Just kidding, y'all. The nurses and techs were great. The doctor was very caring and gentle as possible. And that part is over with. And also, since it's taken me so long to get this out to y'all, we have the results back from the biopsy, and it's good news. It was free and clear. So thank y'all so much for all the thoughts and prayers and well wishes. It means the world to me. I especially want to thank my old friend Courtney. We worked together at JCPenney's back in like 2000, between 2000, 2002. And she just recently got to ring the cancer-free bell. And she was a great coach through the whole like biopsy process and telling me what to expect and all that kind of stuff. So I really do appreciate it, Courtney. And now, how about some history-making news? This story comes to us from ScienceAlert.com. A 20,000-year-old pendant made from a deer tooth yielded up DNA from its wearer, who lived during the Paleolithic period. The tooth was found in a Siberian Denisovian cave. A Dr. Max Planck, I think is how you say that, a German anthropologist, found a way to extract environmental DNA from the deer tooth without destroying the piece. The DNA that was gathered was found to be from a northern Eurasian woman, and all of this came from trace evidence left on the tooth. Over the years, her pendant sat against her skin and left traces of her behind, even though she herself is long gone. And all that was left behind was her pendant. This new step in environmental DNA testing has opened a new door for scientists to map the earliest of human life. DNA can now be gathered from artifacts that were left behind, even if we don't have the remains of the people they once belonged to. That's pretty incredible, y'all. So, with all the chaos and health emergencies and graduation, like I keep saying, we are way late on this episode, and I do apologize. But you know what? Thank y'all for sticking with us. I had to table what was going to be episode 65 because of how much research was involved in it. So, hang in there, Chuck. Your suggested topic is on the way. So, instead of the planned topic, which I'm keeping a hat on for right now, we're switching it up a bit to what some might consider the crown jewel of Columbia County, Florida, the Hotel Blanche. Welcome to episode 65, The Blanche, a comeback story. So to start off, let me describe where Lake City is located. One of the first highways constructed came through our downtown and crossed over another one of the first highways. We're talking about US 90 and 41. Both were completed in 1926, but our story begins a bit before that. See, Lake City used to be a big tobacco town. We had huge barns where buyers would come and bid on farmers' crops. We even had a tobacco queen beauty pageants. One thing we did not have was a fancy hotel for these tobacco barons and their families to stay in. We had several boarding houses, and they were elegant enough, but they weren't what the brainchild of D.W. Brown and his wife Sarah had cooked up with. He and his wife purchased an entire city block on Marion Street in 1901 for about $5,000. Well, shoot, it would still be a steal today. $180,573.21 is how much $5,000 in today's money would be. And I don't think you could buy anything in downtown for $180,000. So that's even be a good deal today. So DW commissioned one Frank Pierce Milburn, who had designed our county courthouse. And it's a pretty one, y'all. We have a pretty courthouse. And he also added a few elements to the state capitol building. Milburn, along with Henry Otis, set to work on what was to become a legacy to many in Columbia County, along with the tourists and businessmen. The hotel was completed in about a year's time, and D.W. Brown named the hotel after his daughter Blanche, the first of the couple's 17 children to survive past infancy. They did in time have 8 children who lived, though, so that's good news. Blanche was only 13 when the hotel was completed, and it became a home to her, and the only known photos of her were more than likely taken inside the Blanche. The hotel is 3 floors. It had a double balcony at one time. They've restored it to a single balcony. Don't think there's access to the top part, but off the second floor you can go out onto the balcony. It once housed a fine dining restaurant in the rear on the first floor, a soda fountain, a salon, and as I mentioned before, it was a popular spot for tourists and businessmen alike. It was also a stop for stagecoaches as well. Can you imagine spending an entire day or days bouncing around in a hot coach down a rutted, dusty road, staying in dingy roadside inns, and then rolling into Lake City? to see the Blanche in the park and the Grand Courthouse across the way. It would have been a sight to behold. On November 20th, 1902, a grand reception was held in the honor of the hotel's opening. It was a lavish affair, hosting the upper crust of Columbia County and several notable visitors from around the state. There was an orchestra and a grand procession and dancing. All sorts of delicacies of the time were served, like champagne cream, lemonade, and a special Blanche punch. I'd like to find out what was in the Blanche punch and give it a try. The Blanche was a place of firsts. It was the first building in Florida to have an elevator, but apparently it didn't have a lift operator, and the guests would have to hit a manual stop when the elevator reached their floor. I bet that was as fun as a fair ride back in 1902. In 1910, the hotel opened what was called a Cypress Swimming Pool, which was spring-fed. Yeah, I googled Cypress Swimming Pools, and it just came up with, like, swimming pool companies. So I don't know exactly what that means, unless that it means that it's spring-fed. I don't know. Though, the pool was only open for about 10 years when it was closed and covered over, and machinery was brought in for modern heating. A boiler and radiators is what I assume. You can still see pipes running all through the hotel. It's pretty cool. In 1912, Blanche was married to Dr. Isaac Chandler in what was considered the biggest and finest wedding in Lake City's history. Though the marriage would be short-lived, Dr. Chandler soon found himself in dire financial straits, and then rather than face it, he chose to take his own life on May 13, 1914. His life insurance policies were enough to cover the mortgage of the couple's homes, but not enough for Blanche to keep her namesake up and running. She was forced to sell the hotel, and she sold it to a firm out of Jacksonville in 1919. And this company would be the one who added the two additional wings to the hotel, one to the north and one to the south. They would later also add a parking garage, which no longer exists. And all of this was done between 1924 and 1926. And it was also around this time that the infamous Al Capone would make his stopovers in Lake City on his way from Chicago down to Miami. He'd always make sure to have a room that faced the street, just so that he could see if trouble was coming. It's also said that the barber shop that was once housed in the Blanche was a favorite of his, best shave and haircuts he'd ever had. Among the Blanche's famous guests, it also played host to a few permanent residents like school teachers, trailway and Greyhound bus drivers, and when World War II came around in the 40s, several officers lived in the hotel while running training missions at our local airfield. The hotel changed hands multiple times after this, though it was kept up in the best of the style through the 50s, and became more of a place for meetings and banquets, and less focus on the hotel part. Shops were opened in the downstairs, and the rooms upstairs were rented out as office space. The gorgeous tiled floors were covered in indoor-outdoor carpeting, and the Blanche had reached her decline. Even with that, she was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1990 because of the significance to Florida history. See, my family moved to Lake City in 91, and by then the Blanche was a shell of her former glory. And honestly, she was a bit spooky in her dusty and dim interior, but you could still see a bit of that glamour peeking through. I asked on our local Facebook pages for people's memories of the Blanche, and my mother-in-law and her family would go up to the balconies every year and watch the different parades that we'd have in town. We have homecoming, they do a Christmas parade, several, you know, the small town parade thing, and that's where they would watch from was the Blanche's balcony every year. So I thought that was pretty cool. Others commented that they could remember attending Girl Scout meetings and many other social club meetings there. Many a business deal happened under that roof. One commenter told about as a child, her mother worked in the kitchen at the Blanche, and she and her sibling could be found having many a lunch and dinner seated in that kitchen. Another poster told of a hat shop that her mother owned that came to a sad end. It was robbed several times during the downtown's declining years, and one of her uncles was also nearly beaten to death because a white lady told her drunk husband that a black man whistled at her. There are a couple more sad tales like this one, and y'all know I don't shy away from telling all the hard truths about the South. Another posted about how as a young black man in the 70s, he entered the Blanche, mostly out of curiosity, and was turned away by the owner of the barber shop. He told the young man, a teenage kid really, that his kind wasn't welcome there. And then on his way out, the boy stopped and asked a man who had a shoe shine station how much a shine would set him back. Now, y'all, this was a black man who was shining shoes, and he had to tell this black kid that he wasn't allowed to shine the shoes of black folks. The kid in question was wearing a pair of Chuck Taylors. He was only inquiring about the price, but wasn't even given that bit of information. So, come to find out, according to many subposts on this topic, that the barber was also known to be the head of the local KKK. And I'm not naming names here because of liability, but multiple people had no problem naming said barber. I really felt like these stories needed to be shared along with the happier ones. So back to the Blanche. So the hotel saw a steady decline through the 90s and into the early 2000s. Her balconies were removed and the old girl was in a sad state. I can remember as a kid sneaking up the roped off stairs to catch a peek. I didn't make it far because I chickened out. It was spooky up there. And before we finish up this episode, how about a couple of ghost stories from the Blanche? Before I reveal her amazing transformation, this story comes from Lynn. Back in approximately 05 or 06, myself and two other people had went to eat at the restaurant that was located in the Blanche. It was called Tucker's. After we had eaten, we went walking inside the Blanche and randomly snapping photos with my phone. I had just bought a new computer and downloaded the photos onto the computer. And my brand new computer blew up. We managed to see the pictures beforehand, and there was a picture that appeared plain as day, and it looked just like the photo of a baby in an ultrasound picture. Oh my God. It was so breathtaking, we just couldn't believe it. I managed to get the photos developed and showed them to the owners of Tucker's. We all just couldn't believe it. To this day, it's still unbelievable. I also heard that at midnight, you can hear a woman screaming. Never experienced it, but I've heard about it all my life. Also, was told by the Tuckers that contractors were up on the top floor trying to renovate, and was told that some spirit or something got after them, and they all ran out and left, leaving all their tools and equipment up on that floor, and they never returned. My skin is crawling sitting here talking about this. I also was told by a person that they had a shop below, and when they were in their shop at night, they could hear children upstairs laughing and playing and bouncing balls up the stairs, and no one was in the building but themselves after hours. Another poster spoke how his friend's dad had managed the property back in the 50s and 60s, and the family lived on site. He talked about running and playing in the halls and hanging off the fire escapes. So, y'all, there's got to be about 100 years of energy in that place. So who's to say that there isn't some of that leftover energy hanging around and still having fun racing up and down those halls? So I managed to find one more ghost story, and this one came from backpackerverse.com, and I'm just going to read it verbatim. So, a little more info here. The second floor of the Blanche offered and offers rental spaces for businesses. And this writer's story goes like this. I didn't want to rent there at all, knowing the rumors and the history of the hotel. But I got a monthly rental rate I couldn't refuse. So reluctantly I moved in and was already starting to develop the funds necessary to move to a more permanent location elsewhere. I remember the day it all started. The sound of running footsteps above me, running from one end of the hotel to the other. It's not as if the sound itself was strange, but just knowing that it was highly unlikely that anyone else was actually up there, it still chills me to the bone. I looked around the office space and people were still hunched over in their cubicles, crunching numbers and writing up reports. They had all gotten so used to it that they didn't even notice anymore. But I thought it was positively maddening. I knew I never would. The following week, I started preparing for taking on a business partner. There were a lot of hoops and the like to jump through, and I was staying at the office quite late. It was a Wednesday night, and I was the only one left at the office. I heard laughter above me. It was so clear, so real. I thought to myself, there's no way that that was some spirit. Somebody has finally managed to break in. As a renter of the building, I felt it was my duty to find the trespassers and report them to the authorities. I went to the main hallway. I tried to flip the light switch, but the bulb must have burned out, so I fished out a lighter I had in my suit pocket. I looked all around for a broken window or some other evidence as to how they snuck into the building. I moved the flame around, and that's when I saw several women moving away from me. They were so faint looking. I jerked my hand with surprise, which caused my lighter to go out. When I lit it up again, there was nothing there. I'm sure many people will say that it was just a shadow effect from the lighter, but I strongly disagree. There are ghosts in that building, no doubt about it. The next morning, I packed up my things and broke my lease agreement and found another office space to rent in Lake City. When I told them I was breaking the lease, they took it in stride. I guess that sort of thing must have happened a lot. Side notes. The building was on its way to being condemned and maybe even demolished when the city stepped in and hired a restoration firm out of Valdosta, and a complete reno began in 2018, and the grand reopening took place in February 2020, just in time for the pandemic. I have stayed at the Blanche twice now since its reopening, and the setting is picture perfect. The first time I went and stayed with a friend and we were going to do some ghost hunting, that sort of thing, but it was just nice and quiet with nothing but the sound of our own footsteps on the floors. But maybe we need to go on a Wednesday. Sounds like this guy that wrote in had had his experiences on Wednesdays. My most recent stay was just like a week ago with producer Mike. We took advantage of the kids all being busy with their after graduation activities and had a little overnight at the Blanche. And again, it's a picture perfect setting. The only sounds we heard were some people that were like doing a tour of the building, just walking around. That was the only disembodied voices we heard were coming from people on the other side of our door. Yeah, it made up a little bit for us having to cancel our trip to the Bigfoot conference and not being able to stay at the Herlong Mansion in Micanopy, but we'll get to those things. There's always next year. Hopefully we'll make it to the Bigfoot conference and get to stay at the Herlong next year. So since the Blanche's remodel, I don't really get any creepy vibes from the place other than you're in a huge building practically by yourself. The city runs it like an Airbnb and has several guest rooms to rent on the second and third floors. So if you're passing through Lake City, consider staying at the Blanche, or heck, if you're within an hour or two, just come on and have a stay. you can soak in the history, and you're going to be right downtown and walking distance to several good restaurants, a brewery, a couple of fun pubs. Oh, and we have a new axe throwing place, y'all. And I think that could become addicting. It was so much fun. And if you want any more information about like the Capone years, check out the book by Linda Bennett called Al Capone at the Blanche. Now, how about our oldest houses by state? This week we've got Maine and Maryland. So Maine has the William Whipple House, built in 1660, and was not only a home but also a garrison, and it's quite an imposing structure. Then in Maryland, we have the Brook Place Manor, built in 1652 by the then governor of Maryland, Robert Brook. Originally a much more humble home, but later additions made the house more manor-like. Like its extra stories that were added and some old Greek revival flair that was added in the 1840s. And now, y'all, I have got a long list of people to thank for contributing their stories to this week's podcast. And also, yeah, I gotta thank y'all for hanging in there, because we are so past due on this podcast. So if you've been waiting to see Lore of the South pop up in your podcast feed, I hope that this episode is a good comeback. So I would like to thank, of course, Doc Essing. He's my number one go-to for Southern history. And here's to everybody who shared their stories with me on Facebook: Billy, Kathleen, David, Dawn, Dan, Nell, Betty, Wayne, Laura, Patricia, Michelle, Lynn, Brenda, Frederick, John, Bruce, Mike, Nicole, Mary, Jody, and Carol. And of course, the Facebook page. You know you're from Lake City when. And if I missed you, I do apologize. Thank you for your contribution. And also, y'all, we're going to be posting lots of pics, past and present, of the Blanche. So look for us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and producer Mike oftentimes will put together like a little TikTok teaser to go along with each episode. If you're interested in extra Lore of the South content and commercial free episodes, consider checking out our Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you could be receiving up to 3 extra episodes a month. And also, it would help us a ton. We're almost to the point between the commercials that we get from our distributor, Buzzsprout, and our 2 loyal Patreons. We're getting enough just to almost break even on all the podcasting fees that we have to pay out each month. And we'd like to be able to take the podcast even further. It would be so great to actually be able to, you know, do podcasts from places. And with y'all's help, we could do it. We could make it a possibility. If you want to get in contact or have a show idea, you can email the show at loreofthesouth@gmail.com. And with that, we'll talk to y'all later on Lore of the South. Bye, y'all.
Stay tuned for a preview of our latest Patreon episode.
Well, in the 1700s, they thought that this could save you from drowning.
That they blew smoke up your butt.
Yes.
So after you drowned, they pulled your pants off.
Yes.
Smoked a cigarette and blew smoke up your
butt. They didn't do cigarettes yet. There were pipes.
They were pipes.
Yeah.
And then just...
This makes it easier to blow smoke up someone's wow. rear end. Okay. So let me tell you how they went about this.
Oh, Jesus.
So, okay. You pull your drowning victim from the water. Oh, no. They're not breathing. So you roll them over quickly, pull their pants down, as producer Mike guessed, and then you find some dude around you smoking a pipe, because somebody's going to be smoking a pipe. And if you've seen those pictures, they had some long stems on them. They would kind of tap it at the pipe out just a little bit, so you know it wasn't too burny. And then they would shove the pipe into your bunghole.
No.
Place like a little filtery paper over the pipe bowl and then blow into it.
Oh,
it'd blow smoke up your butt. So now you know where the saying blowing smoke up your ass comes from.
Dude.
I mean, yes, and it's real. This was a real treatment.
Wow. And when it didn't work, many times.
I mean,
actually,
it just wasn't
how
meant
many
to
times
be.
Did it work?
Okay, like, so I have one case here. I didn't like go into too much detail because I knew this was going to be long. So in the 1700s, this was going on. And okay, so sometime it did work. And even though it was more likely the act of them rolling the body over is probably what brought the person back because they dislodged the water from their lungs, you know, they would sometimes start to breathe again. Magically. So soon this treatment was being used to treat everything from headaches to cholera.
Oh, jeez. So how do you medically explain this to somebody that you're going to do this? Like, sir, in order for you to get rid of those hiccups, we're going to have to drop trowel and we're going to have to blow smoke up your butt and that'll cure all your ills.
Well, and who goes for that?
I don't know. Like,
I mean, and I know people like used to really revere doctors and the educated, you know, but I don't know if I revere anybody that dang much. I think I'll just keep the headache.
Right. Yeah.
And cholera I think that gives you diarrhea. So could you imagine the pipe blower? No. No.
If you loved what you heard, check out the Patreon page for exclusive content by searching for The Lore of the South on patreon.com.